Scratch now, my lord. Apothecary Salis had time to look at it a few days ago. The bones knit, and the muscles are growing back as they should. I shall be fit to join the others at the site in no time. The chapter master smiled gravely and laid a hand on Olivos's shoulder. The vast crater where the chapter fortress monastery once stood was no longer called the Arx Tyrannus. The great fortress was gone forever. And speaking of it only reminded the survivors of the magnitude of their loss. It was now just the site, the scene of a massive excavation effort led by the chapter's remaining tech marines, and supplemented by several thousand labourers from New Rin City. They worked day and night, recovering bodies and equipment, salvaging everything they could. As far as Cantor was concerned, the work would continue until every square centimetre of rubble had been searched and carted away. They owed it to their brethren who had died there, and to the memories of all those who had preceded them down through the millennia. "I'm glad to hear it," Cantor said, "and I'm certain they will be glad to have you, though you are doing your brothers a great service already by flying with the transport crews." Olivos frowned. "At the rate things are going, we'll soon have more crews and ships," the Space Marine replied. "Another two Thunderhawks had to be grounded yesterday for repairs, and there are no spare parts to be had."
"How many does that leave us?"
4, counting this one," the co-pilot replied. Olivos offered the stack of data slates to Cantor. "It's all here in the reports." Cantor took the slates. They seemed heavier in his hand than he knew they truly were. The weight of command, he thought.
"Thank you, brother."
Olivos bowed his head again and backed away. "We're ready to return to New Rin's spaceport on your order, my lord," he said, and returned to the ladder. Despite his injury, the co-pilot disappeared quickly into the upper decks. Cantor stood to one side of the ramp as Phrenotis and the first members of his squad came aboard. The veteran sergeant had removed his damaged helmet as well, revealing the alabaster skin, white blonde hair, and pale blue eyes of a man born on the barbarian world of Jotun. A long, thin red line running from the corner of his right eye back to his ear showed how deep the orc cleaver had bit into his helm before the armor stopped the blow. Cantor met the warrior's gaze for a moment, and the chapter master saw the strain etched there. The invasion had left its mark on all of them, Cantor knew. In better times, he could have rotated the Sternguard squad back to the Arx Tyrannus and given the Space Marines the opportunity to cleanse their spirits in the reclusium, or purge their ill humours with hours of vigorous training. Now, the closest Phrenotis and his squad would get to actual rest was a few days of hurried repair and rearming back at the Kassar in New Rin City, before returning to the Jadon Mountains and embarking on another 3-month patrol. The chapter master turned his attention to the data slates in his hand, thumbing the first one to life and rapidly scanning the reams of information contained within. Since the invasion, the loss of the planet's communication satellite network, coupled with the tons of ash in the upper atmosphere and the ionization caused by orbital strikes, meant that long-range Vox communication would be impossible for months or even years to come. While in the field, Cantor kept abreast of his chapter's operations and the planet's reconstruction efforts by dataslate, delivered during each scheduled supply drop or redeployment. He began with the role of brethren still serving the chapter, committing to memory their current status, location, and readiness. One of the first things that the Imperial Relief Force had accomplished after defeating the Orc invasion was to re-establish the astropathic relay in the system, and reports were coming in from the Crimson Fists who were on undertakings across the Imperium. First among the reports was news that Delavan de Guerro, now the chapter's chief librarian, and Captain Alessio Cortez had safely reached Terra aboard the strike cruiser Crusader. Cantor had dispatched them with all haste to convince the High Lords of Terra that the chapter remained viable despite the losses it had suffered. A chapter reduced to less than 100 battle brothers was typically disbanded, as the pool of viable gene seed was considered too limited to survive. Force Commander Geryon had even suggested as such, telling Cantor that he and his brethren would be welcome amongst the ranks of the Imperial Fists. But Cantor would have none of it. He trusted that Dagaero's persuasiveness and Cortez's fiery charisma would sway the High Lords to give the chapter another chance at survival. There was also news that the Bellator and her escorts had arrived in system and would reach orbit within the week. She was one of the handful of strike cruisers left of the chapter. The rest, along with the battle barges Tigurius and the Sabre of Scarus, had been lost during the titanic space battle against Snargrod's massive invasion force. When the recall order had gone out in the weeks before the attack, Bellator and her strike group had been far to the galactic east on an undertaking against the Corsair Worlds. Her return brought vital supplies, Medikai facilities, and, most important of all, 25 Battle Brothers to aid in the recovery effort. Another dozen or so smaller ships were still en route back to the home world to add their strength to the chapter's severely depleted fleet. The Crimson Fists would need every ship they had left. With the Ark's Tyrannus gone, they had little choice but to become a fleet-based chapter once more. The rest of the reports dealt with the minutiae of an Adeptus Astartes chapter. Weapons and armor inventories, ammunition stocks, supply lists, logistical tables. On and on it went. He checked the entries against those committed to memory, analyzing patterns and gauging the effectiveness of the chapter's operations. In truth, the analyses were not very complex. There simply was not that much left to work with. The thought made Cantor grimace. All at once, the magnitude of his chapter's loss struck home again. Shame tore at his heart, as it had done so many times before. "It is my burden to bear," he thought to himself, the words like a mantra to master his despair. "I am the chapter master. The responsibility is mine. I will not break. I will not bend. I will rebuild. And in time, I will make the Xenos pay." He finished the reports from the Kassar as Sergeant Victorix and his Terminators came aboard. The heavy ramp and the deck of the Thunderhawk shook beneath the tread of the five warriors, clad in fearsome suits of tactical dreadnought armor. Phronotis and the stern guard had already relocated to the transport's upper hold to make room for the hulking Terminators. Sergeant Dicor and his tactical squad were already forming up at the foot of the ramp, waiting for their turn to embark. As the loading continued, Cantor turned to the next set of reports, summarizing the state of planetary government and the civilian population. The situation of Rin's world's imperial citizens was dire indeed. Though a census of survivors was still underway, it was believed that less than 5 million of the planet's original population of 200 million people had survived. Much of New Rin City was a charnel house, and disease was a constant threat to the population. Until the planet's agri-combines could be restored, a process that itself could take many years, Rin's world would be forced to import its food from other worlds across the subsector. It was a bitter pill indeed for the planet's aristocracy to swallow, but better by far than the alternative. Even so, the prospect of starvation over the coming months was very real. Food stores were very low in the wake of the invasion, and food shipments were not keeping up with demand. Cantor paused. He went back and reread the addendum he had just scanned, making certain that he had absorbed it correctly. A frown darkened his square-jawed features. "Is there a problem, my lord?" Sergeant Dicor asked. He had removed his helmet upon boarding the transport, and the artificial light of the forward hold gleamed on his shaven skull and the complex pattern of tribal scars etched across his forehead and around his eyes. Dicor had been born on the feral world of Blackwater, and even before Snargrod's invasion, he was considered a fearsome orc fighter. Like Phronotas, the left pauldron of his armor bore the insignia of the Ordo Xenos's elite Death Watch. The chapter master fought to control his anger. He understood at once what had happened and why. It was even possible that the decision had been made for purely altruistic reasons, though he could not help but notice that the locations mentioned in the file belonged to the most important aristocratic houses left on Rinsworld, and represented a significant portion of their wealth.
2 weeks ago, the Upper Rin House ordered the dispatch of a dozen expeditions to inspect agri-combines across the planet, Cantor told the sergeant. The objective was to identify one or two combines that could be quickly brought back into action, likely by scavenging equipment and raw materials from heavily damaged sites. Dykor's expression darkened. They are defying the edict? Clearly, Cantor scowled at the data slate.
He had told the aristocrats, ordered them, in fact, not to undertake any operations outside New Rin City.
11 of the teams have returned safely.
And the 12th?
72 hours overdue, Cantor replied. They were sent to inspect the facilities at Geras 403. A dozen skilled engineers, 20 militia troops, and 4 flight crew, he thought darkly. A trivial number compared to all the millions that have been lost, but we are responsible for them nonetheless. Dykor understood at once. Geras 403 is in the Altera Basin. The chaptermaster nodded. 85 kilometers southeast of here, near Traitor's Gorge, he said. Right in the path of the orcs we've been hunting. The last warrior in Dykor's squad triggered the ramp controls as he came aboard. Lift motors whined, and at once the Thunderhawk's thrusters began to spool up for takeoff. Cantor blanked the data slate. 72 hours. The expedition's odds of survival were slim. The gunship's thrusters rose to a furious shriek. As the deck plates trembled beneath his feet, Cantor tapped his vox bead. Brother Olivus, he called.
My lord, the co-pilot replied.
Do we have reserve ammunition aboard?
Yes, my lord, a full load. Has there been a change of plans?
Cantor glanced back at the members of his patrol. The Kassar will have to wait, he said to Olivos. Take us to Geras 403.
Chapter 3. The gorge was small by Shaniel standards, but its walls were high and steep, and it wound like a snake's trail among the tall crags of a forbidding mountain range. The watercourse that had carved it over tens of millions of years had long ago run dry, leaving a rocky, sloping floor that began amid broken hills to the north and descended into a lush green basin to the south. It was excellent defensive ground, the Pathfinder saw at once. By luck or by design, the greenskins had chosen well. The warband stood on a granite ledge of a massive peak whose sheer flanks formed the western boundary along more than half of the gorge's length. From there, the Eldar had a commanding view of the hills at the northern end of the gorge and of its approaches. The greenskin camp was hidden from view around a broad curve to the south. Every now and then, when the mountain wind would shift, she could faintly hear their bestial shouts. 9 rangers from Shaniel's company, her very best, as Zethia had directed, crouched like raptors along the length of the ledge, their camellia-lined cloaks taking on the grey and black patina of the rock. Many wore their helmets and their hunting masks, but Shaniel's head and face were bare. She preferred to feel the touch of the air on her face, to breathe in the spirit of a world on the eve before battle. The Pathfinder cradled her long rifle in her slender arms and squinted up at the hazy morning sky. The planet's 2 suns were blurry lamps behind the veil of atmospheric ash. Zethia stood just to Shaniel's left, resplendent in matte black runic armor and a heavy cloak of crimson and cobalt scales. Her face was hidden behind an alabaster war mask, its smooth surface inscribed with complex traceries of psychic sigils inlaid with crushed ruby. Her witchblade, a long double-edged spear made from a solid piece of blackened wraithbone, was clenched in her left hand. 3 long ribbons of white samite were tied to the spear haft, just beneath the long leaf-shaped blade,
their long tails rippling sinuously in the wind. A quartet of gleaming runestones spun in the air above the Farseer's upturned right palm. Behind them, in the deep shadow where the ledge met the arching wall of the mountain, stood five funereal shapes clad in suits of black armour. Each curved plate was inscribed with wards against the terrors of the warp, as well as on the red war masks that each of the warp spiders wore. The Aspect warriors were silent and still, their fearsome death spinners held at the ready. The jump generators affixed to their backs chimed softly, rising and falling in a kind of eerie threnody. 15 warriors and a Farseer, Shaniel thought, feeling the wind pluck at her long braids. Too few by far. But Zethia had been adamant. The task would require timing and finesse, she insisted, not the brute energies of a war host. One by one, the rune stones dropped into the Farseer's palm. Her helmeted head turned fractionally, and she pointed with her spear towards another, narrower peak on the eastern side of the gorge.
"You will be there, Shaniel, along with a squad of your rangers," Zethia said softly. The armor she wore was many millennia old.
When she spoke, her voice was overlaid with the psychic echo of countless other Farseers who had worn it before her. It was like listening to a chorus of ghosts.
"I will remain here with the second squad and direct their fire."
"And our targets?" the Pathfinder asked.
"Fault lines, fracture points," the Farseer said, her voice distant. "You will know them when the time comes."
Shaniel accepted the enigmatic answer with a nod. Such was the way of Farseers. She glanced back at the silent forms of the warp spiders.
"What of them?" "The spider's virtue lies in its web," Zethia replied. "They will begin their weaving after the battle is joined."
"When?" Shaniel asked. The Farseer's head turned. For a moment, Shaniel thought Zethia was looking at her, but realized after a moment that the Psyker was looking through her, at something far off to the south.
"Tonight," the ghostly voice answered. "Even now, Pedro Cantor hastens to his doom."
Chapter 4. Cantor knew a final stand when he saw one. Hundreds of fresh bullet impacts pocked the ferrocrete steps and facade of the Agri-Combine squat two-story operations center, overlaying the faded scars and scorch marks inflicted during the invasion of the previous year. The building's heavy, reinforced doors had been blown open at some point during those hellish early months, so the expedition's militia escorts had made a hasty barricade of burned-out logic engines, overturned tables, even the metal husks of long-dead servitors. The steps and the paving stones of the vestibule surrounding the barricade were heaped with the squat brass shell casings of orc guns and covered with dried pools of thick greenskin blood. Eventually, the frenzied orc attackers had simply hacked their way inside. By then, the surviving militia troops had likely been down to their last few power cells. The high-ceilinged antechamber beyond was littered with spent cells, and the floors and walls bore their own tales of blood, pain, and death. The chaptermaster stood in the entryway and counted the telltale scorch marks of no less than a dozen grenade blasts. Three of the marks were especially dark and small in size. Men had thrown themselves on those bombs in the heat of the fight, smothering the blasts with their own bodies so their squadmates would live and fight on. Once the barricade had been broken, it had been down to bayonet work and point-blank fire against creatures that could shrug aside bolt-gun shells when their blood was up. All told, the militia had held out for hours, maybe even as long as a day. But once the greenskins had made their way inside, things had come to a swift and brutal end. Sergeant Dacor entered the antechamber from the doorway opposite the entrance, his bolter held across his chest. Glass and grit crunched beneath his boots.
"Search complete, my lord," he said.
No signs of survivors.
Cantor accepted the report with a curt nod and went back outside. A rising wind left thin streaks of moisture across the lenses of his helmet and stirred up clouds of dust and ash amid the burned-out vehicles crowding the square outside the operations centre. The chapter master looked south and east, past the rows of gutted warehouses and the vast fields of the agri-combine, and studied the dark line of the horizon. He did not need the atmospheric readings on his helmet display to know that a storm was blowing in from the Median. Sergeant Victorix and his Terminators were arrayed in a loose defensive formation at the base of the center's wide steps, alert in case there were still greenskins lurking about the site. Phrenotis and his veterans were making their way across the square from the west. Behind them rose the huge hangar-like maintenance sheds where the Combine's planter harvester machines were kept. Beyond the sheds rose a trio of elevated landing platforms, where bulk lifters could land and take on cargoes of produce for orbiting cargo ships. The chapter's Thunderhawk sat on one of the pads, its thrusters humming at a low idle. The next pad over bore the blackened skeletal wreckage of the expedition's flyer. The veteran sergeant's voice crackled over Cantor's Vox-speed.
"The orcs struck during the day while the expedition members were at work," he said.
A bright line of bare metal across the side of Phrenotis's helmet glinted in the late afternoon sun, evidence of the hasty repair work the tech marines had performed on the flight to the agri-combine.
"Maybe they were drawn by the sound of the flyer landing, or maybe it was a chance encounter with a hunting party. There is no way to know for certain."
Phrenotis gestured with his combi bolter towards the two-lane access road at the northern edge of the square, which led off through the ruins of the Combine's dormitories.
"They came through the north perimeter fence and then down the access road, cutting off the inspection teams working in the maintenance sheds and the power plant to the southwest. The rest barricaded themselves inside the operations center."
Cantor indicated the landing pads with a nod of his head.
"Well, what about the flyer?" "Well, judging by the tracks, it appears that the team inside the power plant ran for the flyer while the orcs were overrunning the maintenance sheds," Phrenotis replied. "They were boarding the craft when the greenskins caught up with them. A bullet might have found the fuel tank, or the pilot might have been killed as they were taking off. The end result is the same." "And afterwards?" "Once the fighting was over, the surviving orcs gathered up their spoils and headed north, towards Traitor's Gorge," Phrenotis replied.
"Spoils?" Cantor's lip curled in distaste.
"You mean the corpses?"
The veteran sergeant nodded.
"And not just the humans, but their own dead as well," he pointed out. "Which orcs never do. Unless
there's not much else left to eat," Cantor mused.
"How large was this hunting party?"
Phrenotis shrugged.
80 to 100, I suspect. Much less after the battle was done. And also...
"Yes?"
"There were human prints in the ash heading north with the orcs,"
Phrenotis said gravely.
"The beast took at least 5 or 6 prisoners."
The chapter master bit back a curse.
"How long ago?"
2 days,
the sergeant answered. "Perhaps less." Cantor glanced westwards at the line of sharply etched mountains along the horizon. Traitor's Gorge was only 60 kilometers away. If that was where the orcs were camped, then their prisoners were likely already dead and roasting over a fire. Unless the beasts were interested in a little sport, in which case the people they had caught would take a very long time to die. Sergeant Dicor worked his way through the gap in the barricade and stood at Cantor's side. As if sensing the chapter master's thoughts, he said,
"They had no business being here. Your edict was perfectly clear, my lord."
"The fault was not theirs, brother," Cantor said. "They were here at the behest of the noble houses, who have a great many people to feed and winter only a few months away."
Cantor shook his head. "And they did not bring the orcs here. We did."
"Nonetheless, Dykor said. This is not our responsibility. Not now, after all that's happened. Rin's world is still ours, brother, Cantor chided. Whatever is left of it and its people, and we are still Crimson Fists. We are still the sons of the Emperor and the Shield Hands of Dawn. If we turn our backs on our sacred duty, then what right does our chapter have to survive? The chapter master pointed at the distant mountains. Right now, there are Imperial citizens in the hands of our enemies. You know as well as I what kind of fate awaits them. Do you have any doubt that they are praying to the Emperor for salvation? Dykor was silent for a moment. No, my lord, he said. I do not doubt it. Then you understand that we must answer their call if we can, the chapter master replied. And if we cannot save them, then at least they can go to their deaths with the sure and certain knowledge that we will avenge them. Chastened, Dykor bowed his head and rejoined his squad. Cantor keyed his vox speed. Brother Olivos, we're heading to Traitor's Gorge, he said. The Thunderhawk's co-pilot responded at once. We will need to get you aboard at once, he said. There's a major storm on the way, so our transit window is limited. We won't be using the Thunderhawk, Cantor replied. Its thrusters can be heard for kilometers. We don't want the orcs to know we're coming. Understood, Olivos replied, though it was clear that he was uncomfortable with the idea. Then we will power down and wait here for your return. No, the chapter master said. You are needed at the Kassar. We will meet here again in a week's time for pickup. If we don't make the rendezvous, run a search pattern and listen for my beacon. And if we can't detect the beacon? Then return in a week's time and try again, Cantor said sternly. Is that clear? Clear, Olivos replied. Dawn go with you, my lord. Good hunting. Thank you, brother, the chapter master said. He glanced back to the southeast and saw the steadily thickening band of clouds in the distance. The storm was moving quickly. If they could reach Traitor's Gorge in time, perhaps it could be turned to their advantage. Sergeant Phrenotis, you and your squad take point. Sergeant Dykor, split your squad to cover the flanks. Cantor descended the stone steps and made for the northern access road. Squad Victurix fell in around him, while Phrenotis and his warriors jogged ahead to pick up the orc's trail. By the time the Thunderhawk spooled up its thrusters and lifted from the pad, the hunting party was already kilometers away. Chapter 5. The orcs made no effort to conceal their trail. Had they done so, Cantor and his hunters might have caught up with them before they reached the gorge. But the greenskins were more interested in speed than stealth, and the spoor they left behind ran as straight as a bullet in flight, up and out of the Altera Basin towards the brooding mountains. Such a trail said much to a keen tracker like Sergeant Phrenotis. He could tell that there were 6 prisoners by the depth of the tracks left by the orcs that were carrying them, and he was certain that they had been taken alive from Geras 403. From spots of blood and spent shells along the course of the march, he was also certain that the filthy Xenos had already begun to fight over their human prizes. By the time that the Space Marines crested the rim of the Great Basin, Phrenotis reckoned that they were only 12 hours behind the greenskin raiders. The Crimson Fists reached Traitor's Gorge just after midnight, with the fury of the storm howling at their heels. The walls of the gorge were sheer and steep, rising hundreds of meters into the air on either side, plunging the uneven, rocky floor into deep shadow. With a simple mnemonic command, Cantor recalled the most recent geological survey of the region, made some 450 years before. Aerial survey maps appeared in his mind's eye, as sharp as the day he had first set eyes on them. The gorge ran north to south for just over 40 kilometers, sloping gently downwards the entire way before emptying into the Altera Basin. Along the way, the gorge carved a serpentine path where rushing water had found a path through softer rock amid the mountain granite.
There was one spot along the course, near the midpoint of the gorge, where it widened to almost a half a kilometre across. That was where he expected to find the Greenskin camp. Cantor kept his warriors on the move, keeping the stern guard on point and letting them move further ahead to deal with any orcs in their way. Then he called Dykor's squad forwards and let Victurix's slower terminators bring up the rear. The Space Marines kept to the centre of the gorge, where the ground was flatter and allowed them to move quickly and quietly. Distant lightning flickered at their backs, painting streaks of blue across the rock walls and providing momentary glimpses of the barren, rocky terrain. The Space Marines' pace slowed and grew more cautious as they drew closer to their objective. Over the past hour, the wind at their backs had been rising steadily, and the constant flicker of lightning left streaks of static across their helmet displays. The farther they went, the more evidence they found of the Greenskins' presence. Every scrap of dried wood, every shred of vegetation had been stripped from the walls and floor of the gorge. The ground had been churned by the passage of hundreds of heavy hobnail boots, and every corner and crevice near the gorge's high walls had collected drifts of rubbish dropped by orc scavenging parties. 2 hours after they had entered the gorge, Phronotis's voice spoke in Cantor's ear.
"We've found them," the veteran sergeant said, his words hashed with bursts of interference from the storm. "Some isolated orcs moving about the outskirts of the camp just north of us. The rest are concentrated in the centre, around a series of fire pits."
The cooking pits, Cantor thought, feeling a rising tide of anger.
"How many?" "More than expected," Phronotis answered. "Judging by the noise, perhaps 100, perhaps more."
Cantor's eyes narrowed. He studied the status icons along the margins of his helmet display. The patrol had been able to replenish its ammunition, but the rest of its war gear was in sore need of repair. A protracted battle would be risky when even one casualty constituted a serious blow to the chapter. "Surprise is on our side," the chapter master reminded himself. "We are the Sons of Dawn, and these vermin have defiled our world. Our duty is clear."
"Make a path,"
Cantor told Phronotis, and then ordered the rest of the patrol to advance. With Dykor's squad and Victurix's terminators close behind him, Cantor headed up the gorge. The rocky floor turned sharply to the west and then ran for a few hundred meters before curving roughly northwards again. Up ahead, the rock walls narrowed to a natural choke point some 15 meters across. Beyond, Cantor knew, the gorge widened out dramatically. That was where the orc camp lay.
"Weapons check," Cantor told his warriors. With a neuromuscular command, he ignited his power fist's deadly energy field.
Another command released the safeties on Dawn's arrow. Autoloaders clattered faintly in the darkness as shells fed into firing chambers. Lightning flashed directly overhead, followed immediately by a punishing blow of thunder. Cantor passed through the choke point, his armor's autosenses searching the darkness for threats. Past the narrow gap, the slope of the gorge increased slightly. Perhaps another 100 meters further on, Cantor could see the eastern edge of the Greenskin camp. The uneven shapes of crude shelters and filthy trash-strewn nests were silhouetted by the flickering orange glow of the Greenskins' fire pits. The camp stretched nearly the entire width of the gorge, almost to the rocky overhang of Widow's Spire on the left, and the steep flank of Darkridge to the right. A tangle of narrow, debris-strewn paths wound amongst the squalor, all of them leading more or less towards the distant flames. One of Phronotis's veterans crouched at the entrance of one such path, his helmet lenses glowing balefully in the darkness. He rose silently as Cantor approached and led the rest of the patrol forwards. The wind was gusting at their backs, buffeting the Greenskins' crude shelters and sending drifts of rubbish down the path ahead of the Space Marines. 20 meters later, Cantor encountered another of the stern guard, standing watch at a point where three paths intersected. A spray of thick, drying blood gleamed like dark jewels across the veteran's breastplate and helmet. Next to him, in a hut made of Grox hides, lay a trio of dead orcs. The Space Marine gestured for Cantor to follow the leftmost path and fell in beside the others. A few minutes later, they caught up with Phrenotes. The veteran sergeant and two of his warriors were busy dragging another pair of dead orcs into a nearby cesspool as Cantor approached. They were very close to the center of the camp now. They could hear the sullen roar of the flames and the guttural voices of the Xenos as they crowded around the cooking pits. One of the beasts started loudly declaiming something to the assembled crowd, his words rising over the mounting wind and the angry rumble of thunder. Cantor tensed, thinking that they had been discovered. But then he heard the blustering tone of the greenskin's voice and realized that the beast was bragging to its fellows. No doubt it was gloating over the fresh meat that roasted over the fires, the chaptermaster thought. He concentrated on fixing the location of the voice in his mind.
"The cook fires are 15 meters further ahead," Phrenotes said as the orc bodies sank beneath the muck. "Most of the high-ranking orcs are on the far side, judging by the noise."
Cantor breathed deeply, centering himself. Heavy drops of rain pattered against his shoulders and the back of his helmet. Thunder growled, and the smell of burning flesh filled his nostrils.
"Are any of the prisoners left?" he asked.
The veteran sergeant glanced towards the flames and then shook his head.
"No, my lord."
Cantor nodded grimly.
"Vengeance, then," he said.
"I will lead the assault with Squad Victorix. Squad Dicor has the left flank. Phrenotes, you will take the right. We form a wedge and strike for the orc boss and his retinue on the far side." The Crimson Fists moved without hesitation, taking up formation as Cantor ordered. Within seconds, they were ready. As they moved into position, a lusty cheer went up from the greenskins as the orc boss finished his speech. The Xenos celebrated while death arrayed itself in the darkness.
"Grenades first," Cantor said. "Then we charge."
As one, the Space Marines crept forwards. Squad Dicor and Phrenotes drew fragmentation grenades and primed them. Squad Victurix's assault cannon spun up with a hungry whine. A few meters up the path, the huts gave way to a wide, cleared space given over to a quartet of roaring bonfires. Capering Gretchen turned iron spits over the flames, roasting blackened torsos that had once been men. Greenskins surrounded the leaping flames in ranks 3 and 4 deep, bickering and snarling at one another over charred bones and dripping marrow. On the far side of the flames, the biggest orcs formed a rough arc according to size and power, flanking a towering greenskin boss with a jagged iron jaw and a ponderous suit of heavy armor plates. As Cantor watched, a smaller orc with a gleaming metal skull plate and an augmetic eye handed the boss a freshly stripped human skull. The huge greenskin accepted the morsel with a grunt, its iron jaws cracking it open like a piece of candy to get at the sweet brain steaming within. A tremendous fork of lightning split the sky overhead, bathing the entire camp in white-hot light. The orc boss straightened, the skull falling from his hand as he saw Cantor and his Space Marines. Pedro Cantor raised his power fist to the sky.
"For Dawn and Rin's world," he roared. "Death to the Xenos!"
As one, the warriors of Squad Dicor and Squad Phrenotes let fly, hurling their grenades into the midst of the orcs and then bringing up their bolters. Cantor and Squad Victorix were already on the move, the earth trembling beneath their tread as they charged towards the orcs. Hoarse shouts of alarm turned to screams of pain as the grenades exploded, sending buzzing clouds of red-hot shrapnel slicing through the packed greenskin ranks. At the same moment, the Crimson Fists opened fire, and a bloody reckoning was at hand. The Terminators fired on the move, ripping through the packed greenskin ranks with deadly bursts from their twin-barreled storm bolters. Cantor leveled Dawn's arrow and tore 3 orcs into ragged pieces with a stream of mass-reactive shells. Then Above the hammering of the guns came the vicious snarl of the squad's assault cannon. The range was so close and the enemy so crammed together that every round found its mark, ripping through flesh and bone and toppling the Xenos in a spray of flesh and blood. But the surprise was short-lived, and the carnage did not dismay the orcs in the least. Indeed, they revelled in it. Return fire erupted around the Space Marines, though most of it was wild and undisciplined. Shells tore through the air around Kantor, or clanged from the heavy armor of the Terminators. A hissing orc bomb bounced across the ground at Kantor's feet. With a yell, the chapter master hooked it with the toe of his boot and kicked it back into the crowd. The crimson fists plunged deep into the greenskin ranks. Orcs hurled themselves at Kantor and the Terminators, bellowing war cries and hacking at the armored warriors with cleavers and chain axes. The Terminators let the blows fall upon the heavy plates of their tactical dreadnought armor and responded with fearsome strikes from their power fists. The detonations when their energy fields connected with flesh were louder and sharper than the constant thunder of gunfire. Kantor met an orc's charge with a swift punch from his own power fist, crushing the greenskin's chest and hurling its body backwards into the press. Another jab caught a screaming orc against the side of the head, vaporizing its skull in a blue-white flash. He swept Dawn's arrow in a short arc, carving his way still deeper into the Xenos ranks. Off to his right, Brother Artus's heavy flamer gave a breathy roar, sowing death and terror through the greenskin ranks. On the left, Sergeant Dykor's men were raking the orcs with a relentless barrage of fire. They were less than 5 meters from the fire pits. The greenskin surrounding the Space Marines began to falter under the storm of flame and steel. Kantor could see the orc boss beyond the flames, bellowing exhortations at his warriors. His mob was already surging forwards, brandishing huge cleavers and rusty mechanical claws. All except the orc, with the augmetic eye. The greenskin took one look at the onrushing crimson fists and ran off into the darkness, disappearing behind a line of squalid huts to the west. The blow of an orc cleaver crashed against the side of Kantor's helmet, sending waves of distortion through his visual displays. Without looking, the chaptermaster felled the greenskin with a backhanded blow from his power fist, then cut down 2 more with a ripping burst from Dawn's arrow. A trio of orc shells stitched their way across his left pauldron and the front of his breastplate, leaving bright grey smears on the ceramite. A howling greenskin leapt at Kantor, swinging a chain axe in a vicious overhand arc. The chaptermaster caught the beast's arm with his power fist, then bowled the Xenos over with a shoulder to its chest. The orc hit the ground, gripping the smoking stump of its right arm and bellowing in fury, until Kantor's boot came down on its throat. Only a handful of greenskins were left between him and the fire pits. Dawn's arrow snarled, blasting apart 2 of the orcs, and the rest fell back under a hail of automatic fire. Kantor paid no attention to the fleeing greenskins. Instead, he charged straight for the war boss and its bodyguards, leaving Victorix and his Terminators behind. "Death to the Xenos!" Kantor shouted again, his power fist raised in challenge. He leapt straight through the roaring flames, propelled by a wave of righteous fury. "Vengeance for the fallen!" The war boss's mob answered with bestial shouts of their own and ran to meet the chapter master with guns blazing. Streams of heavy orc shells ripped through the air, striking sparks or bursting into red-hot fragments against Kantor's sacred battle armor. Dawn's arrow responded in kind, its twin barrels shimmering with heat as it raked the greenskins with high-velocity rounds. The mass-reactive slugs punched through the orc's crude armor as though it were paper, their explosive tips blasting 2 of the Xenos into bloody bits. A heartbeat later, the 2 sides crashed together in a hail of deadly blows. Kantor felt a cleaver smash into his thigh and rebound from the ceramite plate. The point of another blade dug into his breastplate, lodging between 2 silver pinions and cracking the laminate beneath. A chain axe screamed, glancing from his right pauldron in a shower of sparks. The chapter master twisted away from the blow, his left hand darting out to seize the throat of the orc that had tried to stab him. He pulled the greenskin into a vicious punch from his power fist, then flung the headless corpse to the ground. The orc with the chain axe rushed in again, this time swinging at Cantor's neck. The chapter master ducked the blow at precisely the right moment, and the axe's ravening teeth sank into the throat of a charging greenskin instead. Cantor pressed his advantage, raising Dawn's arrow and ripping the axe-wielder apart with a burst of point-blank fire. Cantor had sowed bloody carnage through the ranks of the mob, but the surviving Xenos were quickly surrounding him. A power claw landed a heavy blow on his left shoulder, its hooked blades biting into his armor. The chapter master fought to keep his feet as the greenskin hauled backwards with all his might, trying to pull him off balance. Hydraulics hissed as the three blades of the power claw bit down, scoring deep grooves in the thick ceramite pauldron. Warning icons began to flash at the margins of Cantor's helmet display, and the pseudo-musculature beneath the armor plate spasmed, causing the arm to lock in place. The claw had struck a neural feedback node, locking the muscles like a nerve strike. But the chapter master saw that the link to Dawn's arrow still worked perfectly. Cantor fired off a short burst, blowing the orc's legs off at the knee, then drove his power fist into the screaming greenskin's chest. Another blow, and with a sharp thunderclap, the orc's power claw was torn free at the elbow. Cantor shook his shoulder violently, trying to free himself, but the claw had locked down in a death grip and would not come free. The chapter master grabbed at a claw blade with his power fist. There was an angry sputter of released energy as the power field interacted with the rough steel of the claw. Temperature icons flashed insistently on Cantor's helmet display as the blade began to glow red-hot. Another second, two at most, and the metal would be soft enough to tear free. Seeing that Cantor was half-paralyzed, the survivors of the war boss's mob let out a bloodthirsty shout and closed in once more. Behind him, Cantor could hear answering shouts from Victorix's Terminators as they tried to fight their way to his side. Expertly placed shots from their storm bolters snapped past Cantor's struggling frame and struck down several of the greenskins. But the rest closed about the chapter master like a clawed fist. Cantor roared an oath to Dawn and pulled with all his might at the claw embedded in his shoulder. The incandescent metal bent, joints screeching in protest. The war cries of the greenskins resounded in Cantor's ears. Blades and axes pounded against the chapter master's armor. Chain axes screeched and slid, seeking purchase on the curved plates of his shoulders and arms. Cantor was driven back a step by the frenzied onslaught, but he forced himself to ignore the blows and focus on the power claw instead. Just a few moments more, he told himself. And then came a roar like a maddened bull grox, as a massive figure plowed through the frenzied mob. The orc war boss drove through the press like a living battering ram, smashing orcs aside or trampling them underfoot in a berserk charge at Cantor. The orc boss was armed with a huge drum-fed gun and a broad-bladed axe that was larger and somewhat better made than most greenskin weapons. The giant brute was fast for its bulk and clever. While it was still a few meters away, the Xenos raised its gun and fired off a long, chattering burst at Cantor's chest. A hail of heavy rounds hammered at the chapter master's breastplate, ricocheting off its curved surface or flattening into dull, leaden discs against the ceramite plate. Already on the back foot from the frenzied attacks by the boss's mob, the onslaught of shells nearly knocked Cantor off his feet. He caught himself at the last moment, arms thrown wide for balance, when the war boss stepped in close and swung at him with its axe. The blow was a flickering blur in the darkness, reaching for his throat. Cantor's razor-keen senses saw the glint of the axe's curved edge and twisted his body at the last moment, letting the strike slide harmlessly by. He followed up with a devastating blow with his power fist, but the war boss tucked its shoulder and continued its charge, slamming into Cantor's chest and hurling him backwards. The chapter master landed heavily on his shoulders and neck, the impact digging a furrow along the churned ground. Laughing madly, the war boss pressed its advantage, unleashing another stream of shells at the fallen space marine. Rounds kicked up plumes of dirt around Cantor, or rang against his legs and shoulders. He responded in kind with a burst from Dawn's arrow, but with his arm still locked, it was impossible to aim, and the burst missed the war boss by scant millimeters. Roaring in triumph, the orc reared above Cantor. Lightning flashed, glinting cruelly along the edge of the greenskin's axe. The chaptermaster rolled away from the blow, kicking out with his leg at the same time and hooking the orc's knee. The war boss toppled sideways, crashing to the ground with a stream of angry curses. Cantor was on the brute in an instant, rolling back towards the Xenos and bringing